Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. This month we bring you a selection from Passport to Crime, a department of EQMM that features translated fiction. Josh Pachter, a regular fiction contributor to our magazine, is also one of our most prolific translators, and it's he who brought our attention to the work of Dutch writer René Appel, a two-time winner of the Golden Noose Award for Best Crime Novel. That's the Dutch equivalent of the American Edgar Allan Poe Award. René Appel and Josh Pachter have not only worked together as author and translator, they've also co-authored fiction, including a story for EQMM in September-October of 2017. Given their past productive collaborations, it seemed fitting that Josh Pachter should read for us a tale that he translated, René Appel's story, Red Handed, from the December 2014 EQMM.
It had to happen, sooner or later. I suppose I knew from the moment we began that we were bound to get caught. It might take weeks, months, maybe a year, or even longer. But ultimately, it was all sure to come out. Sometimes I thought about what the eventual revelation would mean, what the consequences would be. And then, crazily, I almost wished we would get it over with and move on. I didn't like those thoughts. And I never shared them with Rian. No, definitely not. That would have ruined the few precious hours we had together. When at last it did happen, though, it took me completely by surprise. I didn't want to be there, surrounded by chaotic noise. I had no interest in the greatest hits of the 80s, the laughter of the crowd, the wild screams of some woman at the bar. But I hadn't objected when Rian suggested the cafe. We could have just sat in the car, but it was going to take at least an hour for someone from the auto club to come to our aid. And the cafe, Kathy's Corner, was just 100 meters up the street. "I'm thirsty," Rian said, flashing a sweet smile. "Haven't you got a bottle of water?" I asked. She shook her head. Like just about all young women these days, Rian always has a bottle of water with her, but not this time. Maybe I'd begun to get into the happy spirit of the cafe despite myself. Mostly 30-somethings, Rian's contemporaries. It was a happening kind of place. Thoughts of relationships, love, and sex hung in the air, though most of the thinkers were thinking no further than a simple one-night stand. We sat side by side on a stained old banquette in the corner. I drank red wine. She had rosé. I told her my idea. I had to go to Brussels on business. The business would only take me a day and a half at most. But I could stretch the trip out to 3 days. There was no way Marloes could take time off from her job. So would Rian feel like... She hugged me. I kissed her, too passionately for a public place, too intimately, too meaningfully, but I couldn't help myself. Her perfume, the expression in her eyes, everything tugging me irresistibly towards her bedroom. And then my neighbor Vincent appeared, right there in the cafe, right at our table, several kilometers from our part of town. It was as if he'd gotten lost. He eyed us, this kissing couple, an ironic smile touching his lips. "So, Ralph," he said, "what a surprise." My instinct was to push Rian off, but I was able to control myself and instead just scooted a little away from her on the couch and reached for my wine glass with a slightly trembling hand. "Caught," flashed through my mind. "Caught red-handed." I cleared my throat, searched for something to say, wondered if I ought to introduce Rian and Vincent. Vincent, by the way, was more than just my next-door neighbor. He often came over on Saturday mornings for coffee, on Sunday afternoons for something stronger. Not long ago, we'd invited him for a barbecue. "Come on, Ralph, the man's all alone since his wife died," my socially conscious Marloes had said. When I looked up from my guilty thoughts, Vincent was gone. He seemed to have vanished, not necessarily off the face of the earth, but at least from the cafe. Rian asked me who he was. He's my neighbor, dammit. We see him all the time. He's not exactly a friend, but still. Whispering, I repeated the words he'd said. What a surprise. Rian said nothing. We drank our wine in silence. The next time I saw Vincent, a couple of days later, we were both working out in our backyards. He was weeding. I was trimming the hedge. We chatted about the weather. I hunted for some confirmation that he'd caught me with Rian in his eyes, in his voice, in the way he gestured. There was nothing, not the glimmer of a sign. I began to relax, but that changed the moment Marluce came out the kitchen door. You boys want coffee? It's such a nice day, we can sit outside. The sun feels wonderful. I baked an apple cake yesterday. Want some, Vincent? I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say no. What a cliche. As he came through the gate that separated his yard from ours, he gave me a sly wink and said, I'm always up for a delicious treat. You too, eh, Ralph? I nodded and mumbled something in response. I steeled myself for further innuendo, but he was done for the moment, apparently happy to leave it at that one little elbow in my ribs. We talked about the weather, about our gardens, about the road work being done in our street and the sorry state of our neighborhood park. Innocent subjects. After a while, Vincent told us he thought it was time to finally clear out his attic. This was a sensitive topic, and his voice cracked a little as he told us of his plans. Marluce nodded understandingly. Around a year earlier, Vincent's wife, Esther, had died, victim of a hit-and-run who'd sailed through a red light as she was crossing an intersection with the green. The attic had been her studio, where she made her sculptures and ceramics. It may seem cruel, said Vincent, but I can't just leave it forever. Life goes on. Besides, he sighed deeply, I don't even like a lot of it. Some of it's actually pretty ugly. He looked down wistfully. She never made much of a go of her art. He gestured vaguely toward the statue of a kneeling, naked woman we, good neighbors to the end, had bought from Esther and given a place of honor in our garden. I had the impression that he'd put air quotes around the word art. More coffee? Asked Marluce. Vincent and I said, yes, please, almost simultaneously. As she refilled our cups, Marluce suggested that I could help Vincent with the attic cleanup. When she went back into the kitchen with the empty pot, Vincent proposed we set to work the next Sunday afternoon. I said that wasn't really convenient for me. Why, did I have something better to do? Again, that broad wink. Something else, not necessarily better, I said. But maybe I could make Sunday afternoon work, after all. He arranged for a dumpster, and we schlepped Esther's basically interchangeable artworks, kneeling, naked men, women, and children, mostly two kids together, down from his attic. It wasn't easy work. Most of the statues were surprisingly heavy. The ceramics, also a lot of kneeling figures, were less cumbersome. We stopped for a beer around 4. Like real men, we drank straight from the bottle. How long's it been? Asked Vincent, out of the blue, without any beating around the bush. What? The girlfriend, that lovely young lady. What's her name? Rian. 4 months, but Marluce doesn't... My lips are sealed. We got back to work. By the end of the afternoon, the attic was as good as empty, and the dumpster was practically full. Vincent covered it with a big square of canvas, hiding his late wife's artistic inadequacies from the neighbors. He came over for dinner. Marluce had made Indonesian food, and we washed it down with more beer from more bottles. My fear that Vincent would spill the beans about Rian gradually dissipated. A week later, he asked if he could borrow my car. He had to go to Amsterdam, and his little Suzuki Swift was in the shop. He was pretty insistent about it, leaving me little room to refuse. Not refusing seemed like the right thing to do anyway, even though I'd arranged to see Rian that day and given Marloes a vague excuse about meeting an important client at the airport. I wound up sitting around the house alone. Marloes went off to meet a girlfriend at the movies, and I couldn't get through to Rian to cancel. Vincent had me by the short and curlies. That was clear and becoming clearer. He asked me if he could borrow some money to remodel his house, so he wouldn't be surrounded by memories of Esther. I suggested he try the bank, but he replied, "You afraid I won't pay you back?" And when I denied that, he said, with unmistakable meaning, "So you need the money for something else, I guess?" I got the idea he knew we had a fairly sizable savings account, not to mention some investment in the stock market, but I couldn't remember ever having discussed our finances with him. I loaned him 14,000 euros at 4% interest. A few days later, he came up with something new. This time, though, it seemed like he wanted to make my life better, not worse. He and I were sitting out back, Marloes was in the kitchen, when he brought it up. We'd been talking about tennis. Yeah, I used to play some years back. So had he, with Esther, but he'd given it up when she died, although he knew he needed the exercise. It wasn't something he could do on his own. You needed someone else so you could encourage each other. If you had a regular game, then you had something to schedule your time around. I said I wasn't sure I was interested. It was already hard enough, I thought, to squeeze in occasional Saturday afternoons when I was able to see Rian while Marloes was off visiting her parents or shopping. "I don't know," I said. "I'll have to think about it." Marloes came out the back door with a glass of rosé. "Think about what?" Vincent explained his idea. "Well, that sounds great," she said. "You could use the exercise, Ralph." The next day, I ran into Vincent as we were both trundling our trash cans out to the curb. "We don't actually have to play tennis," he said, conspiratorially, all man-to-man. "You could use the time for a different sport, if you'd rather, with a different partner. I'll cover for you." I could have hugged him, but luckily I didn't, because that busybody Verhoeven across the street picked just that moment to appear with his garbage. We began the charade the very next Saturday afternoon at 1:30. We drove off together, and Vincent got out of my car a few blocks from home. He promised me he'd make sure Marloes wouldn't see him slip back into his house, and even if she did, he'd just say he'd forgotten something. We went on that way for several months, and those Saturday afternoons with Rian were wonderful. Until she started agitating for more. "We should go on a trip together, to a hotel, someplace fun." I had the impression that our little Brussels getaway had given her more grandiose ideas. Everything had been going fine, but that afternoon, I found her smoking a cigarette with an irritated expression on her face. A quick screw wasn't enough for her anymore. She went on and on about wanting a real relationship, a true connection, trusting each other, building something meaningful together, yada, yada, yada. I was out the door by 2:30. I considered killing some time so I could return home at my normal hour, but I wasn't in the mood to sit around pointlessly in some cafe or on a park bench. I could always fake a tennis injury, and the fact is I was feeling pretty injured anyway. When I got back to the house, there didn't seem to be anyone there. Odd. Marloes's bicycle was chained in its usual spot, and then I saw it lying on the stairs. Vincent's tennis bag. What was that doing there? A warning bell rang in my head. I crept up the stairs, and suspicion morphed into paralyzing certainty when the hot and heavy sounds from behind the closed bedroom door hit my eardrums.
Red Handed is copyrighted by Renee Appel. The translation is copyrighted by Josh Pachter. Music for this podcast entitled Cat and Mouse was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreenmysterymagazine.com.